I will talk not about manure especially, but about the diagnosis and farmer participatory experimentation to develop solutions, and especially on a case study of cassava in Asia. I used to work for the SIAT. I'm now retired. So for those that don't know, cassava, Manihot esculenta, oftentimes better known as tapioca, is the fourth or fifth most important food crop in the world. It is grown mainly in tropical countries, usually between 30 degrees north and 30 degrees south. About 50% of the world production is grown in Africa, where it is a very important basic food staple. 32% is in Asia, where it has become a very important industrial crop. And only 18% is now grown in Latin America, although that is the center of origin of this crop. Now in Thailand, cassava is generally grown on very light textured, very sandy soils, almost looks like beach sand, with gentle slopes. While in Vietnam, cassava is oftentimes grown on rather steep slopes. In both cases, erosion can be a serious problem in cassava. In Asia, there are very few insect and disease problems that limit cassava yields, unlike Africa or Latin America. So cassava can be grown continuously on the same land for many years, as long as we can maintain soil fertility and prevent erosion. Those are the two aspects most important. Here we see some data from Thailand, where cassava was grown on farms without any fertilizer application for up to 35 years. And we see that the yields in three different soil series declined over time from almost 30 ton to about 10 to 15 ton per hectare because farmers were not applying any fertilizers. This is due either due to erosion or to nutrient depletion of the soil. Let me see if I can get back. Yeah. However, if you do apply the right kind of fertilizers, you can grow cassava in Asia year after year for as long as, in this case, 36 years. Continuous cropping of cassava in the same plots in the foreground without any fertilizer application. And the yields here are 2 to 4 ton per hectare. Well, in the background, with a balanced fertilization of chemical fertilizers and some organic inputs like compost, you can maintain yields of 25 to 30 ton per hectare, even after 36 years of continuous cropping. So I said, in Thailand, cassava is grown on gentle slopes, but even on those slopes, runoff water can accumulate in the natural drainage ways. And that can cause rather serious, can break the contour ridges and cause serious gully erosion. So in 1994, we started a new project managed by SIAT, funded by the Nippon Foundation in Japan, with the objective to enhance the sustainability of cassava-based cropping systems in Asia by the widespread adoption of soil-conserving practices. And the strategy that we used was to involve farmers directly in the development and the dissemination of very location-specific but most suitable and most effective soil-conserving practices. And our target was to benefit at least 8,000 farmers. Now, as I said, the objective was to include farmers in the process of developing new technologies. And this is the framework that we used. We started out the process with problem diagnosing with the farmers. What are the problems? What are the opportunities? And once we knew what the problems were and what the possible solutions might be, the researchers showed many options in FPR demonstration plots. Many different options to solve some of their farmers' problems. Then farmers would visit those demonstration plots, evaluate the treatments, and select the best options for their particular situation. And then farmers would do FPR trials on their own fields to test those options that they themselves had selected. Then farmers would, at the time of harvest, evaluate and select the most suitable options from their own trials. They may then retest for another 1 or 2 years. They may make some adaptations before and to scale up to their production fields, and then they would adopt and disseminate. The unique feature of this approach is that farmers were involved in every step of the process and made all the important decisions. The partners in this project were the Nippon Foundation as the funding agency, SIAT as the coordinator, in collaboration with many research and extension organizations in Thailand and in Vietnam, universities and research and extension institutes, and to a lesser degree in China. So many people were involved in this project. So it started out with a diagnosis of problems by sitting down with farmers using rapid rural appraisals. We asked many questions and learned then about farmers' conditions, how they grow cassava, what are their needs and what are their concerns. Also, we did some matrix ranking to determine the problems and opportunities that farmers had and learned about farmers' priorities, in this case in Kongba village in Hainan Island of China. And we also talked to farmers in their fields and asked them about their particular problems, in this case specifically about erosion problems in their cassava fields in Thailand. Then we set out demonstration plots and invited farmers from selected villages or pilot sites to visit those demonstrations and evaluate all the various options. Then the farmers would select those that seem most appropriate for their own situation. And farmers would conduct simple trials on their own fields, in this case erosion control trials with about 5 treatments on a uniform slope. Different treatments like vetiver grass hedgerows, Tephrosia candida hedgerows, maybe contour ridging, maybe intercropping, and always one treatment of the farmer's traditional practice. In this kind of trials, it's very easy for farmers to see that some simple practices like planting contour hedgerows of lemongrass or vetiver grass were very, very effective in reducing soil loss and runoff. And farmers that see this immediately see how much soil they were actually losing, how much water and how much fertilizer they were losing due to erosion if they do not have any soil conserving practices. So farmers in this community then immediately started planting vetiver grass hedgerows along the contour in order to reduce their soil and nutrient losses. Then at time of harvest, we would invite the participating farmers as well as other farmers of the village or surrounding villages to evaluate every treatment in every FPR trial in their village. Farmers then, after evaluating that, would sit together and discuss which varieties and which practices they liked best, which were most useful for their particular situation. By the end of this 10-year project in 2003, we had been working in a total of 99 villages or pilot sites, about 35 in southern China, all over Vietnam, especially in North Vietnam, Central Vietnam, and South Vietnam, and in most of the cassava growing areas of Thailand. During the last 5 years, when we were scaling out to more and more villages, working with more and more farmers, in total, farmers during these 5 years did more than 1,000 FPR trials on their own fields. They were most interested in testing new varieties of cassava, but besides the variety testing, They also agreed to do some erosion control trials, and they also definitely wanted to use fertilization trials, intercropping trials, and in both China and Vietnam, they also wanted to have pig feeding trials using cassava roots and cassava leaves for feeding their pigs. In Thailand, they were also interested in green manures, in weed control, in plant spacing, and intercropping trials. So the type of trials that farmers like to do varied a little bit according to the situation in their village. We also developed farmer participatory extension approaches like cross visits, field days at time of harvest, large-scale field days or setting up of cassava development villages, training of local FPR teams, and as well as the traditional pamphlets, posters, booklets, videos, TV programs, and newspaper articles in order to spread the knowledge or the information about new technologies. Here we see a cross visit. Farmers from a new village would visit a village where farmers had already done the FPR trials and had already selected vetiver grass as contour hedgerows to reduce erosion. And the new farmers were so impressed by the effectiveness of the vetiver grass that they immediately asked for planting material of vetiver grass to take home and plant in their own cassava fields. We also had some large-scale field days where more than 1,000 people came to see farmers, school children, government officials, the press and TV, and hear about the newly adopted soil conservation practices that these farmers had been testing. During those field days, the FPR trials would explain to other farmers that were visiting the results of his trials. So this is farmer-to-farmer extension, which is particularly effective to spread the knowledge about the new technologies. Also, this farmer in Vietnam was interviewed by television crew, and so the information about what he had learned was then spread over to a much wider audience. We also had training courses where we invited two key farmers of each pilot site together with their local extension officer so that they would learn together and start forming an FPR team that could assist neighbors in conducting FPR trials and adopting soil conservation practices. What was the total result? In Thailand, in China, farmers adopted mainly two new varieties that they had selected on their FPR trials, and that became one of the most popular varieties that are now grown in Hainan Island. In Thailand, farmers that participated in the project planted a total of about 150 kilometers of vetiver grass hedgerows to control erosion in their cassava fields. And also in Thailand, 21 cassava development villages were set up with the objective to empower the community to make their own decisions and to help each other to improve cassava production and farm income. And these self-help groups were also managing a rotating credit fund, which was very useful especially for buying fertilizers. In North Vietnam, we visited this village, Thong Nhat Commune, in 1998. The problems were very obvious. Yields were very low, about 2 to 4 tons per hectare. Erosion was a serious problem, not just in cassava, but also here in the tea plantation on the other side of the hill. 2 years later, we visited again, and here the farmer was proudly showing his new cassava field, in which he was now planting a new high-yielding cassava variety. He had used the right balance of fertilization. He had actually intercropped with peanuts, which were already harvested at this stage, and he had hedgerows to control erosion in his field. In this field, he ended up harvesting 27 tons per hectare. So that was a huge improvement over his traditional practices. In another district in Yen Bai province in North Vietnam, farmers had planted 500 kilometers of double row hedge rows of Tephrosia candida to control erosion. This is a leguminous bush, which can also be used as green manure. And farmers preferred this over the vetiver grass. While in Thailand, all the farmers had selected vetiver grass as the most effective and most useful. In North Vietnam, most farmers had selected Tephrosia candida, indicating again that it's not very useful to recommend one particular method of soil conservation, because this varies according to the soil and climate and the situation of the farmers. At the end of the project, we went back to the pilot sites where we had been working. We found that new varieties had been adopted by almost 15,000 households in about 35 villages over an area of 7,000 hectares. And that produced, because they got higher yields, that the value or the cross income from those higher yields were equivalent to $1.1 million. Fewer farmers were interested in intercropping, but still over 4,000 farmers had adopted intercropping in about 160 hectares. Erosion control, only 880 farmers were in Vietnam had adopted any kind of erosion control practices. Balanced fertilization by 1,700 households, root and leaf silage for pig feeding in 1,172 households. The increase in income due to the adoption of these new varieties and practices totaled about $1.3 million in those 35 villages. We also found that increased cassava production leads to increased investments in cassava processing, which in turn then stimulates increased production because prices then tend to go up, and this leads, of course, to rural development and the escape of poverty in those areas. In case of Vietnam, about 20 years ago, there were no cassava starch factories. At this moment, there are at least 60 factories in operation, and there are 4 fuel ethanol factories under construction in Vietnam that will use cassava as their feedstock. At the end of the project, we also did a very intensive impact assessment, talking to 4,000 farmers that had participated in the project, and also 400 farmers that had participated and 400 that lived close by but had not directly participated in conducting the trials or any training courses. And we asked them about their yields before they worked with the project and after the project. Most impressive was the yield increase in Vietnam by those farmers that had participated in doing those FBR trials. They doubled their yields from about 14 to 28 tons per hectare. Farmers that lived nearby but had not directly participated increased their yields from about 15 to 24 tons per hectare. And in the whole country, on average, according to FAO data, yields increased from about 8 to 14 tons per hectare over that 5-year period. In Thailand, similar results, but not quite as impressive. If you look at the cassava yields in various cassava growing countries, in India, the yields are very high, but they did not increase much during this 10-year period. The same in China and Indonesia. If you look at Thailand, yields started to increase gradually over the years of the project. In Vietnam, nothing much happened in the first 5 years, but in the last 5 years, yields increased very dramatically due to the adoption of new varieties and agronomic practices. If you compare cassava yields in Asia with those in Latin America and Africa, we see that in Latin America, cassava yields have not increased substantially over the last 50 years. In Africa, they did increase, but starting from a very low base, going up now to about 10 tons per hectare. While in Asia, cassava yields have been going up in leaps and bounds, and especially during the last 5 years, during the last 15 years, cassava yields in Asia have been going up very, very remarkably, and yields are now about 20 tons per hectare for all of Asia. Now, how much have farmers benefited from those new varieties and technologies? We know from FAO data the total area that were under cassava in 2004. This is up to 2004. We know what were the yields in 1994 when the project started, and in 2004 when the project ended. There were very remarkable yield increases in Thailand and Vietnam. And even in the total of Asia, yields increased 3.7 ton per hectare. If we multiply those yield increases by the price per ton of fresh cassava roots, we see that in total in Asia, the gross income by cassava farmers due to these higher yields totaled $325 million every year. If we expand that now to 2004, which are the last data that FAO reports, the total area in Asia now is 4 million hectares. The average yield now is 20 ton per hectare. The yield increase over those from 1994 to 2009 is about 7 tons per hectare. The price of cassava is at least twice as high as they were in 2004. Actually, last year they were $100 per ton. Then the total increase in gross income due to these higher yields is more than $1.5 billion for poor cassava farmers in Asia. Those are very remarkable results. So what we learned is that helping farmers to conduct their own simple farmer participatory trials on their own fields is the best way to achieve adoption of improved varieties and agronomic practices that will increase cassava yields and farmers' income. Thank you very much. Thank you.